Interview with Luther Hodges, Jr., President, North Carolina National Bank, August 28, 1974, Charlotte, North Carolina.
1960. Didn't he serve out part of a term and then?
It was fall of 54 through the end of 60. Filled out Umstead's term from 54 to 56.
Yeah, you pretty much recall that whole period from 1950 on through, you do?
I never lived in Raleigh, was in Chapel Hill, at Carolina, when he became governor, and was in the Navy the remainder of the time. But I served. Visited the mansion on occasion.
As you think back over that period, say from this year back to 1950, what major political changes did you see in the state?
I think this has probably been a major change was Terry Sanford and some of the things, I think, innovative things that he did. And my father. You know, I used to deny him, and I used to minimize as a child as I want to do, just to say thank you, yeah, he is a good man, and go on and think about something else. But I genuinely think he changed things as much as anybody has, and he and Sanford. I think he's in a relatively stable state politically up until last election, obviously from a party standpoint. I don't know which area to focus on as far as what politically, you say political.
Well, you say that the Hodges administration and the Sanford administration were the two most significant in that period. What do you mean in terms of accomplishments?
In terms of accomplishment and doing something different, I think we drifted back into a little more of the same, and I think speaking frankly, when you don't have people that are, you know, that are have confidence, that do surround themselves with good people, and who are willing to do something for whatever reason, you have progress, and I think there was distinct progress under the two of them, and I don't want to appear critical of other people, but I don't think the same relative progress made in other administrations. I don't remember the time prior to my father well at all. I mean, I had the feeling that there wasn't a lot of change in society. So that's what government should be doing, seems to me.
You mean since Sanford, you had essentially caretaker administrations with Moore and Scott, or?
I wouldn't want to be quoted about that to Dan Moore or Bob Scott or Jim Holzhauser.
What is that?
Or Skipper Bowles or Pat Taylor. You know, I don't really think you've had the kind of people that Sanford overthought were.
All right, insofar as your father's administration and Sanford's administration, what in your mind stands out as the major contributions and the major changes and impact they had? And also the distinctions between the two.
Oh, I think my father did bring a different pace to it. Some as being a businessman and questioning a lot of things, and just the same old way of doing things. I think he may have created change for the sake of change. I think the industrial development, which is I don't think is much of an issue to talk about today, I think was an issue then. I think the community college system, vocational education, which was started then, was very, very significant. I think the race relations were handled fairly well. But I think as far as contribution, I would have to talk about community colleges and industrial development and developing a pride in the state for a place to live and work, mostly the emphasis on work and his idea of raising per capita income. Industrialization. I think Sanford was more same old thing. Education. Everybody talks about education. I think he was more progressive, somewhat more liberal, somewhat more far-seeing. I attribute that most to his ability to surround himself with people who were truly bright, truly good, and therefore came out with more of an intellectual administration than he himself could deliver. But he handled it extremely well. And the North Carolina Fund, one of the things that after all is said and done, I think put North Carolina a little bit ahead of others. There was a demonstrated concern for the little man, more in that administration than, I think my father had the same concern, but it was expressed a different way towards giving the person a job. Sanford says they did express a concern in the little man.
Thinking ahead, do you see another period of change such as that occurred during that 10 years coming up? I mean, do you think the people of the state are ready for that kind of change again?
I think the people of the nation are dying for some sort of change away from the traditional caretaker-type government. I don't automatically see it happening. In fact, I see, as far as the candidates are concerned, a lot more of the same.
I was going to ask you that. Do you see anybody on the horizon that could provide that kind of leadership and bring that sort of change?
No.
What does that suggest to you about the Democratic Party? Well, Jack, we got a description of the Democratic Party of North Carolina we thought was classy. And let Jack lay it on you and see what how you react to it.
It was described to us by someone who we felt was a very perceptive observer. It was likened to a bird with no head and many wings flapping simultaneously in different directions.
Is that different to the Democratic Party most anywhere?
Yeah, I think it is.
Was it worse in North Carolina?
North Carolina and Tennessee are very parallel in that regard.
In those situations where the Democrats have been in power for years and years, and all of a sudden they're out of power and they're looking at an incumbent Republican governor, you have the same kind of situation occurring. Almost nobody rises up, or you have a whole kind of a phalanx of people, all who pretty much look alike. But no one rises out of that to provide leadership, at least not initially. I'm so used to having that office, that state house, that without it, things just sort of fall apart.
I'm just trying to think, analyze it. I get the feeling that, because I don't have the in-depth perspective, but I get the feeling that just by definition that the Democratic Party doesn't really have any single-mindedness of goal and purpose.
Well, that
certainly in a state like this where you've had the primaries have been fought, conservative, liberal, so to speak, within the primary, it causes much thrashing about when you try to put it together.
Well, how would you describe the state of the party today?
Very poor.
Why?
But my perspective, I don't remember it when it, I don't know the party when it was strong. I say back in my father's time or Sanford's time, I was not, I was interested as what was going on, but didn't know the party machinery as I do now or as I have over the last 4 or 6 years. Leadership is the answer. Plus, I don't think the people are as interested in parties anymore. Just in general, you can't muster a lot of enthusiasm for the party per se. I think it's going to be people are interested in a philosophy. I'm not saying that they're not don't care about the philosophy, but I don't think the philosophies are defined very well by the party anymore. And because they're pretty complex issues and philosophies, it's not somebody can think one way in some areas and different way in others.
Where do you see it going? Why hasn't anybody emerged?
Well, I don't know that they see I don't think they see the party as that important. You know, I get we talk about ticket splitting, or just that the Republicans are more disciplined. I mean, you're quite right. In my opinion, 2/3 of people are registered as Democrats, but the Democratic Party per se is not the majority party. I think the undecided and the mass of the people are the majority. And they're not really that affiliated, one or the other.
the party hasn't related to it. The party itself doesn't come through with a significant meaning. I think they're interested in people. New direction, change. The party's not saying change. Do you think? These are questions that, you know, I can just think about. I can't give you a discourse on it. But.
You don't see it changing. What would it have to take to get the Democratic Party back in the State House, the governor's office?
Well, I think that it, excuse me, I didn't think, I meant the party as an institution changed.
I didn't see that changing.
I genuinely feel that the Democratic Party will win in 76 in North Carolina. I think that it's Mr. Ford and some of the changes have made it slightly different, but I don't see the quality of leadership emerging as an opposition. I think the Republicans have got equally difficult time finding somebody popping up above the crowd. And, and I think the Democratic, here I say party, or I think the people who identify with, traditionally with the Democratic Party are going to take it a little more seriously next time. And, we'll probably can win in 76. After all said and done, you know, the best man's going to win. You know, and that's an interesting little phenomenon that, that comes through. That, the guy that's usually the best candidate wins, whether or not he's, whatever party he's in. That may not be the right thing for political analysis, but I've sort of sensed that. And I sense that's what the people want.
You don't see the party producing that kind of a candidate in 76?
Oh, well,
a new direction sort of person?
Well, you know, I'm just, I read the same names that you read in North Carolina, and, for one reason or another, I've known them all, And I think that the Democrat will beat the Republican unless Mr. Stevens does a brilliant job in the really good job against Morgan. I think that's what he's running for in 76. And it looks like that could work, because he'd probably do better because of the circumstances nationally than anyone thought. And he will emerge as a pretty strong gubernatorial candidate in 76. So that's the problem. If you take Stevens out of it, then I think any one of those Democrats will beat whoever the Republicans have, because I don't think they have any. I'm sort of pessimistic about the quality of leadership. That's all I'm saying. And I don't, the Democratic Party per se, unless it, I don't know how it produces a candidate. I think it produces, it'll produce a Jim Hunt as a candidate, clearly, unless something changes that circumstance.
I guess when I talk about the Democratic Party in North Carolina, I mean the people who have been involved in the regular establishment organization over the years, who wanted to produce the nomination for Taylor, who think would produce the nomination for Hunt if nobody gets it. I guess that's what I mean by people, by the party. I don't mean the party, the central, the state committee and that sort of thing. I mean the people, the office holders identified with the Democratic Party.
Okay. And your question is, do I think will come up with a candidate?
Do you see any major changes in that group that'll produce the kind of candidate you're talking about, that the state's ready for?
I think the state is ready for it. I mean, in that sense, I think the people are ready for it. I don't know if I see the candidate. You know, a lot of people tell me that I should do that. Struggling with
what do you say to them?
You know, that the Ravenel thing is proof that I, that I should do it. That I, on some days I genuinely believe that I'm a different. I've got the the leadership qualities and the blend of the, you know, the establishment plus the compassion and the, you know, and I think I philosophically understand the, you know, what the Democratic, some Democratic philosophies. What it takes to avoid the polarization that can destroy our society, and you know, a lot of things.
You feel that?
I don't see anybody else. Put it that way, but I don't. I don't right now. I'm not. I don't feel comfortable with talking about my myself. I believe that if I were to start doing it now, I genuinely believe I could beat Jim Hunt, and I could prove to the people, to the quote Democratic Party, that you know, that I, that they need something different, and it's I.
No, we're not trying to bug you.
I know that.
We're trying to make some predictions in the book as to where we think politics are going. Now, one reason for interviewing you is we think that you're going to be in that future. Now, we don't, the assumption is that you're going to run for governor someday or for some statewide office, and we're not trying to pressure you.
I want to talk about it. I mean, I'm happy to talk about it, but I don't. We're struggling with a way to get into it. I don't mean to be so presumptuous to say there isn't anybody else, but I don't see the kind of leadership that I think not only I but the mass people are looking for in the candidates as existing. Nor do I see them even hypothetically.
Because you're not saying it, but it's sort of a. It's sort of implied, and not by just what you said, but one could say then that Hunt has had almost 2 years to, in effect, be the titular head of the Democratic Party in North Carolina as lieutenant governor when you have a Republican governor, and he apparently has just not excited a whole lot of people.
No, he's turned them the other way, in a way. But the truth is, you know, I like him in a sense, and I've said it before, philosophically, I think that his, you know, his heart's in the right place and so forth. But like everybody else, maybe I'd be that way if I were there. But, doesn't have the guts to do anything. You know, it's everybody wants to not make a way. But if you're always worried about the next job, you ain't ever going to do the present job. And that's what's it then.
What sort of a role do you see Morgan playing in the Democratic Party of North Carolina if he gets, let's assume he gets elected to the Senate? And Morgan has been around North Carolina politics for quite a while, been active statewide, and he's a person who enjoys the political aspect of politics, and he's perceptive politically. Is he likely to emerge as a dominant force in the state Democratic Party?
He certainly be the titular head of it. He might take that from Mr. Hunt. I hear he's from Mr. O'Hara, or that they're working closer together, which I think is, almost makes a farce out of the system. I'm getting cynical in such my short experience. I don't see the leadership, period. You know, I've, in the existing office holders and existing candidates. Maybe my standards are different. Maybe I'm psychologically comparing everybody to myself and saying that they're not there. And yet at the same time, I'm not willing to necessarily get into the game right now. I mean, I do think that philosophically that I can bring something to the party, not figuratively, and genuinely want to do it. Have a tough time with the length of time that it takes to get into it. One of the things that interests me about Ravenel, most interesting thing, you know, not the newcomer, but is the 9 months aspect. So, you know, I think to stop whatever you're doing, if it is a constructive thing that you're doing, for several years to get into it. At least two. It is an awkward sacrifice.
And it's working less and less in the South. it seems to me that...
Which work?
Where you start like Jim Hunt when you're 14 to run for governor.
Okay, I see
what
you're saying.
And then you do that, for 5 years or 10 years or whatever. It seems that...
The thing that bugs me, I don't understand how a man can be so... Anybody can necessarily think that they are going to be psychologically or intellectually or emotionally big enough 4 years from now. I see people
change. Depend on your perception of what the job is?
Well, all right, that's a good point. And nobody's got much respect for the job.
Ravenel drew an interesting parallel, being an old split-T quarterback. He said he thinks that political opportunity is almost like, compared it very much to a back hitting a line in football. He said, you've got to hit it just when the hole opens. If you get there too late, the hole is slow and you go nowhere. And you've got to spot it. When it opens, you got to move right away. He said he just thinks that timing is... His whole point was timing, and that's why he said he ended up running this year.
Jack, that's becoming more and more important in Southern politics. I mean, that's one of the things we have found, that very phenomenon.
Right.
That it doesn't take 2 years or 4 years or 10 years to work up to all the establishment organizations and do all the right things in order to become the nominee. I mean, that used to be the route, but it isn't that way at all now.
It seemed to be a perception of conditions being right.
And at 76, it seems to me, it almost looks like a critical juncture for the Democratic Party in this state. If they don't win that one, they're going to have something like Tennessee.
I've said that the Republic, if they don't win in 76, the Republicans will be there for 4 or 5 terms. And I think that Holzhauser is obviously running his administration not trying to win any stars for anything other than being the first of a long line of Republican governors, because everything he's doing is devoted towards to building the Republican Party in North Carolina or in government. Because he's doing nothing dramatic, nothing good that I can see that could say that Jim Holzhauser did this for the state of North Carolina. If he's successful, and he could be successful. And I agree with you that if he is...
You think that's a critical year?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
What do you think is the most...
I'm interested if... I'm almost sacrilege, but I guess I'm more interested in the question. I'm delighted with Jerry Ford and Nelson Rockefeller. I mean, I'm just delighted with Nelson Rockefeller. That's a sacrilege, but all I want is somebody willing to do something with state government. I think your point earlier that people thought about the job, their perception of the job, was one of the problems. I mean, if they viewed it as just something they'd like to be, and therefore all they got to do is be alive and reasonably healthy when they get there, then sure, you take it this time, I'll take it next time, and I'll do all the right things so that 1984, it's my turn. The thing that bugs me, and as I started to say before, when I see people in business peak out, you heard that expression, and I'm sure it happens, and I know it happens in academia, and I'm sure it happens in the newspaper business. It happens in the political business too, and people ain't as good as they were last year. They're no longer got the grasp, got the perspective, got the quickness, got the concerns. They start enjoying themselves, start enjoying life, they start feeling comfortable and happy. When you're comfortable and happy, you don't do anything.
One of the things that astounds me when we interviewed politicians in North Carolina, maybe this has changed since last fall, I don't know, but the notion that somehow 1972 was an aberration, it was an accident, it's not going to occur again. 1976, we were right back to normal. We're going to have a Democratic governor, heavy majorities in the legislature, and we'll win back those Senate seats in the future. But I just want to test this thing. I don't see that.
Uh-huh.
You got Ford and Rockefeller on that ticket, and popular in this state in 1976, and you throw in a guy like Stevens with high name recognition and identity that he had at that point. They got an opportunity in that year to take this thing and then leapfrog it, for 3 or 4 terms.
There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about it.
But my point to you was that I don't recall anybody that we talked to who foresaw that possibility, because they couldn't foresee the Ford thing. But at that time, Nixon was still fairly popular.
Mm-hmm. You can sure as hell see the Stevens thing.
No, my point is, the perception is among most so-called old regular Democrats that that was just an accident, and we're going to go back to the way things were in 76.
Well, I don't think that, obviously. And I come up with this quaint idea that the best man wins. You know, if they really have the best candidate, you know, and Stevens may damn well be better than most of the names on the list. That's what happens. And they, you know, the people are going to vote Republican in the House of Representatives, you know, if the Republicans have a good candidate. The number one candidate here in the House of Representatives happens to be one of the best legislators, and that's why he runs it to please the state. Larry Cobb, just a friend of Holzhauser's and all that, but he's also an honest, able man. And those things start to come out. I don't think the party itself will produce the leadership. That's why I think the real question is where they're going. What's going to change?
What are you going to do about it?
I don't know. I really don't. And I feel terribly indecisive when I say something like that. The present economy makes it less and less likely. That's why, it represents. You know, it represents plenty of challenge. I used to think that when I had done what I was doing, that I wanted to do something else. But I think it'd be a while before bankers are through doing what they got to do in this economy. And I think great changes are being thrust upon us because of the new economic order, which we're going to be living with.
What's the most significant thing about the Ravenel experience to you?
Well, I guess it's just the 9 months. I mean, I didn't believe that he could do it. Everybody had been telling me, if you want to do it, you know, just get to work. And then all of a sudden, he comes. I know him. And I did, this is a truth statement. I told somebody, I said, well, that's great, you know, because he can run, and all he has to do is be respectable. And he can run again 4 years from now. You know, he had nothing to lose. He just, if the hole wasn't open, maybe the hole would be open 4 years from now, if he keeps in shape. If I did it, I got everything to lose, you know, and I don't get a chance to run again. And that's, I don't like to lose. Nor will I go into anything where I don't mind working for something, but I'm not going to go into it the beginning with the odds against me.
Yeah, but that pattern of somebody rising from obscurity to win a primary or a runoff is something we're finding all over the South. I mean, isn't it? Ravenel is not an exception to that. Dunn, Governor Dunn in Tennessee, is an example, Republican example. In Arkansas, Governor Bumpers was an example. These have been unknown.
Askew.
Some of the more outstanding statewide officers have come up just like that quick, principally because of television. We saw it with Skipper Bowles as well. I mean, he started out with 8 points in September of 1971, and he won the second primary. He did that in the course of about 8 months, from nowhere to winning a runoff, principally via media.
Yeah, but he was not I don't think there's a parallel between Ravenel and Bowles.
There's a parallel in the exposure and the
identity. Oh, sure, yes. That you can do it in the time factor. You can, because of the media and professionalism and running a campaign, that part of it can easily be done. I don't know whether O'Haron thinks that he's the newcomer. You know, you don't have to be young to be a newcomer. And Lord, I hope there is somebody that, you know, comes out of nowhere who, got intelligence and integrity and guts. So,
do you think at some point you're going to run for a statewide office?
Yes.
Is that a matter of timing?
I think, definitely a matter of timing.
It's somebody.
Maybe I'm
asking for anybody to give me anything on a platter. I think at some point in the future, like if it's not 76, 1980, the Democratic Party, and whoever the hell that structure might be, is going to have to recognize a two-party system and avoid, and because of costs and a lot of other things, avoid the springtime event and then the fall again. Isn't that true in most strong two-party states? I mean, you don't really have what you have here. And at some point, North Carolina will change. Now that there is honest-to-God Republican opposition.
Well, our experience suggests that Tennessee is now really a two-party state. But my question, or maybe suggestion, was that maybe this could be the second Republican or two-party state in the South if 1976 came together right for the Republicans.
One of the things going on in Tennessee that's interesting and nowhere else is the truth.
Tennessee, not Texas.
See, one of the things that's interesting in Tennessee is that the Republicans and now the Democrats are both sort of actively going out recruiting candidates, helping with funding for legislature, you know, down to legislative level. The party itself has gotten active in terms of recruiting candidates and raising campaign funds for legislative candidates and going out, in effect, looking for good people. And that's one of the really interesting phenomenons I found in Tennessee.
And the party is doing that?
Yeah.
Is there that kind of leadership in the party?
Well, the Republicans started, isn't it, and the Democrats. In the Democratic Party, the real spearhead of it is the Speaker of the House. And the state chairman is directly involved too, but that's all real new. This is the first time this year.
All the Democrats.
I mean, they're out with fundraising events, going out around and scouring the state. You know, going into communities where who'd be a good candidate for the legislature from this area.
Well, Jack, part of the thing is that if you build a strong Republican Party organization, that generally results in a strong Democratic Party organization doing the kinds of things a political party ought to do, but it hasn't done in the South. There hasn't been any party organization.
They're not doing. They're just beginning in Tennessee.
Beginning.
The Democrats, the Republicans, have a strong organization in Tennessee. The best in the South, wouldn't you say, easily?
Are one of the best party organizations oriented around state jobs, state office people who are in elected in any way, or are they people who genuinely care? That's the. The real interesting question is whether so much of it in before has been related to what did the office do for me, you know, what did the party do for me, how did they help local and local government.
I think in Tennessee, and I think Tennessee is especially interesting because it's reached a development no other southern state has in terms of real two-party competition, even more so than North Carolina. You've got a Democratic legislature that has about 50 to 49 in the House, and I think it's 19 to 14 in the Senate. And
plus the Republicans control the major statewide offices.
Republicans, two Republican senators and a Republican governor. Much more party discipline in the legislature than anywhere else. And
do they have strong primaries within those parties to choose their candidates?
They have primaries, but the weakness of it is there's no runoff provision in the primary. So the Democratic nominee for governor this year got 22% of the vote.
There were 12, quote, serious candidates under, quote, primaries passed out this month.
12.
We went to a unity meeting after the election where they all endorsed the man who got 22% of the vote. You can imagine what that's going to take to pull that together. Because there is no party organization. There's just a lot of candidate factions.
Well, why do you say it's a strong system?
I say
It's a competitive system.
And the Republican, by organizing and doing things that political parties ought to do, is now forcing the Democrats to do the same thing.
Did the Republicans have a primary that had a lot of candidates in?
Three. They had three.
For governor, they had three.
All good candidates?
All were serious candidates.
But there again, the young personality, I think, the new personality won it. Lamar Alexander. What is he, 33?
Something like that.
33?
He'd been done in Baker's campaign manager. Tell us a little more about your own background. You know, you said you were in college when your father was governor, then you went to Navy.
I grew up in Leakesville, now Eden. He was born in Eden Fieldcrest Mills. He ran the mills and moved to New York, went from the production side to the sales side just before the war, moved to New York. Lived in New York during the war, went to public school, Westchester County, went to private school during the year, actually 2 years while they moved, family moving back after the war. Was the ninth. Went to Leakesville High School, then went to Germany. My father went over there with the Marshall Plan for the textile industry. Spent a year high school in Frankfurt. He came back, retired from Marshall Field. I finished high school in Leakesville, and he ran for lieutenant governor while I was in high school. One became lieutenant governor while I was in high school. Then I went to Chapel Hill with the Navy, went to Harvard Business School. Didn't know what exactly I wanted to do after Harvard Business School, after having a second of my two children. Moved to Chapel Hill, where family had a house. They were in Raleigh. To teach for a year and to be a research, to do further research in corporate finance at the Chapel Hill Business School. I had watched the growth of the North Carolina National Bank when I had worked for Wachovia Bank at one point when there was only the one bank. Followed it through that year in the academic world and came here in 1962 to work for the North Carolina National Bank. Continued teaching at night a couple of years. Worked here, then moved to Chapel Hill. Coincidentally, always back to Chapel Hill business to run the bank, the North Carolina National Bank in Chapel Hill. Then moved back to run the North Carolina National Bank in Charlotte, and then subsequently into the other jobs. You know about some of the extracurricular activities along the way.
You know, tell us about them, because I know them only vaguely.
I mentioned the North Carolina Fund. That was something I got involved in, and from the North Carolina Fund helped start the North Carolina Manpower Development Corporation. And
what were you doing with the fund?
Just a director. I know. I guess I was. Darius Sanford appointed me, and I don't know why, back in those days, maybe through my friendship with some of his associates or advisors or people who've been close to him. It was towards the end of his administration when I came back here. Came here in 62. I guess it was shortly thereafter. I was still in the Naval Reserve, and I was trying to think of the other things I did. And I taught at Queens College, and then I did that, Manpower Development Corporation. I got going when I was in Chapel Hill. Came back here, and of course, it's maintained.
Now, what was your role with the Manpower Development Corporation?
I'm chairman of the board. I've been chairman ever since it started.
What was the basic concept behind that?
The North Carolina Fund, when it said it was going to be in business for 5 years to identify the poverty problems, it stuck to its goal and went out of business. It created three independent agencies that it thought could carry on its work as separate nonprofit organizations. In the three critical areas, one was housing, low-income housing, one was manpower development, the other was the Foundation for Community Development, which was the more maybe, Nathan Garrett in Durham, black leader who it was the more controversial of the areas in which it worked as far as I can't even really describe. It was creating and trying to make more changes in society for the black community. The Manpower Development Corporation, which was my interest in the economic side of the fund, was formed as out of the interest of OEO and NAM, of all things, to find out a better way of delivering of manpower services. I thought that North Carolina might be a model for the rest of the nation because of its rural, developing urban setting, small enough to study.
what could be done in job matching and basic skill training and things of this nature. As you know, we started experimenting with new processes, and we've institutionalized the job training and the pre-vocational education in the community college system, tried to take the computer job matching into the Diploma Security Commission, doing a lot of sensitivity, management awareness, sensitivity type of things. Then it formed the Manpower Council, or urged Bob Scott to form the Manpower Council, because in anticipating manpower revenue sharing and saying that the state should get involved in what are identifying manpower problems and how to spend the some $45 million that was coming into the state in a highly fragmented way through the various agencies formed under OEO, fostered under OEO. So we got Scott to make these, create the Manpower Council, and I had to be the first chairman in order to try to get it going. And it was to do the planning, which the Manpower Development Corporation had done for the state. And the Manpower Development Corporation went out of business. Holzhauser sort of messed up the transition of the Manpower Council and also the delays in changing the manpower legislation in Washington. So the Manpower Council is just now getting started again. MDC is staying in business with Department of Labor is asking to do a lot of other studies because it's developed a pool of talent that's rather unique in the nation. When I came back here from Chapel Hill, I became chairman of the Democratic Party, Mecklenburg County. I'm on the Board of Governors of the university, which is something that I've sort of said that I may have done in the manpower area. May have pushed on that long enough and get involved in this other area as a principal concern. Another, as the principal outside interest. But there are numerous other boards and trusteeships and things of this nature. I'll give you a resume if you want, if you really want to know all those things.
I'd read that you were approached about being head of some private group involved with the hunger thing. But
it's an interesting thought.
What has been your reaction to Holzhauser's handling of that issue?
I'm shocked. I can't understand. He really could have had done, strengthened the Republican Party had he, you'd assume he could hold on to his conservative constituency that says I made it the hard way, let them make it the hard way sort of folks, and picked up all the other people, but it escapes me why he didn't do it. But I was really quite interested in doing the hunger thing, only because I thought it was the right thing to do. It's strange, and I had to talk myself out of it. But it would have been construed as my effort to put together a 100-county organization for 1976, and it would have been construed as striking out at Holzhauser, a totally political thing. And it would have been misinterpreted this day and time for a banker. My thoughts were that I happen to believe we got a serious economic situation, and that the chairman of the largest bank, if he's got some extra time on his hands, ought to be doing some for the bank, for the stockholders, if we pay me, so on and so forth. I thought it was the right thing to do. I genuinely believe that's exactly what government ought to be doing, state government ought to be doing. I believe that the states have abdicated their, Washington took over the concern for the little man because the state government, local governments didn't have it. And that's true. And I think that now it can be far more effective and far more efficient being delivered by local government. They'll just do it. And I think Holzhauser, he had such an easy one to do. There's so many other things that state government should do. That was such an obvious one. So I was quite tempted to do it. And it was simply the business decision that kept me from doing it. And I really have done all the things in the manpower that I can do. a lot of attention to it, and it's, you know, people are now worrying with those problems, doing some things about it.
What have you done insofar as chairmanship of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party? Have you made any changes there?
That did not last. By the time the party reforms came along, they had a new election in the midst of it, and I did not run again. I stepped in at the time, and worked at it, and brought about the new organization, and stepped down. Thankless task, I must admit.
What sort of a challenge would it be for a Democratic nominee for governor in North Carolina who wants to fit the progressive molds that Sanford built insofar as dealing with eastern North Carolina today?
Challenges in eastern North Carolina?
Well, the challenge in dealing with eastern North Carolina, which is perceived as being more conservative in social issues.
Well, I think eastern North Carolina is a, I think if somebody not from eastern North Carolina can do, if I'm involved, do far more for eastern North Carolina. I think it's the greatest thing, greatest asset we have, the land and the people. We haven't broken down the conservative. You've broken down the guy in the big White House on the Hill who tried to stop any kind of progress for his own good. I think those days have gone, but there's basically the people are fundamentally conservative, and I think you kind of work with them and bring about some change. I mean, I'd get the food processing industry in there so fast. I wouldn't put the medical school in eastern North Carolina. I'd do a lot of things in the health care area that can be done. I don't know exactly what programs I would do in eastern North Carolina, but I am firmly committed to, I think that I don't see any war between east and west. I mean, I'd be very much treated.